Accession number 20331, Reel 4.
John Perkins, Reel 4.
Anyway, as I was saying, the white markings that were on the Allied planes, the German Air Force had done likewise on theirs. So we were standing there like a load of idiots waving at them. And they shot up anything from everything on every airfield from the German borders into I think they went as far as Brussels. Because you see that the Allies had celebrated the New Year. Anyway, after the New Year, we gradually went into the area in preparation of the Rhine crossing, which was in March, 23rd of March, I think. And the 43rd Wessex did actually take part in the actual initial crossing, but we followed through very quickly, and the bulk of us crossed over by American amphibious vehicles known as Buffaloes, which could take a 15 underweight truck or a Bren carrier, you know, or infantry, you know, just standing there. And once they got the other side, they could go straight off the out of the water, lower their ramp, which was at the rear, and the vehicles could drop off or reverse out, or the infantry could just get out quite easy. And we, you know, when you tell people, "Oh yeah, I crossed the Rhine on a buffalo," buffalo. Because there's a little point of interest, many code names of different weapons used by the British Army, nearly all were derived from animals. There was, I mean, I can't see the logic of a Churchill tank fitted with a flamethrower being called a crocodile. But it was called a crocodile, just the same. And likewise, a Sherman tank with its turret taken off and all its interior removed, except for the driver's compartment, known as a kangaroo. The logic of that is a kangaroo carries its young, doesn't it? But and then, of course, I mean, there was other little bits and pieces. A little amphibious vehicle, which was about the size of a Jeep, was known as a weasel. But all it could do was just carry stores or a couple of men. But it was it could push its way through the water, all right. Yeah. Anyway, then, as I said, then came the Rhine crossing. And, you know, to me, it was pretty pretty uneventful, and the next big battle, in fact, I think it was the last major battle for the division, was Cloppenburg, a town between in the centre of Westphalia there. And that was the last major battle, which was sort of early March.
And then, of course, April.
Pardon?
Early April. April.
Early March. But no, beg your pardon. Early April. Sorry, early April. And from then on, of course.
What do you remember about Cloppenburg?
Well, As a mortar platoon, we didn't have to do a lot because it was basically very foot soldier, meaning that the rifle companies, some job, because there was a lot of houses there. And the only thing I remember really is that they, on one of the main roads which we moved along, the Germans had built a massive great roadblock, and that required a Royal Engineers modified Churchill tank, which could fire almost a projectile about the size of a dustbin, full of explosive, and it just blasted. But as regards the code name, I can't remember that. But you know, but that was, and then of course early April. Then of course it was a lot of it was stop start, you know. And then when the war was coming to an end, the Dorsets and the Hampshires, we finished up at a small German village a few miles from Bremen. And but of course Bremen was a very fortified place, and they was hoping to prolong the war, meaning the Germans were. But of course our corps commander knew better, because he knew exactly what he had available. He had the 43rd, he had the 51st Highland Division, and another division, all available to really take it to task. So anyway, as the war ended, and we was in this little German village, and one minute it was all action, the next minute it was all rejoicing, you know. And we had a battalion church parade the following morning.
What was the name of the village? We'll look it up afterwards.
Yeah. Okay. Then of course the couple of days later, it was decided that they would have a victory parade through the city of Bremen, there was a contingent from each battalion, you know, from the three divisions, meaning 43rd by 6th, the 51st Highland, and it might have been the Tyne Tees, 50 div, but anyway, I'm not sure on that one. And all the vehicles, some of the vehicles, were cleaned up, and we didn't have to clean them up. They recruited German prisoners of war, you know, clean all the mud and the filth off. And they made a damn good job of it too. I mean, they didn't need telling, they knew exactly what to do. And then of course, as we know, the war ended on May the 8th, and we stayed there for about 10 days at a rough guess. But the worst job I ever had to do, the platoon sergeant came up to me in that rest period, he says, "We want a platoon notice board." He said, "You see that sideboard?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Cut it in half." And it's a beautiful sideboard, plate glass, and I had to cut it in half with a rough old saw and make a notice board with glass doors on it. Civilian. It was in a civilian house. But there you go. Wars, wars, they say. And we eventually, as I said, about 10 days after the war ended, we moved into the town of Vincennes-Lure, and that is a few kilometres inland from Lüneburg, from Hamburg. And that's where we started our garrison duties, or occupational duties.
How did you get on with the Germans?
At the beginning, we had no problem, because we weren't allowed to speak to them under the rules of fraternisation issued by Montgomery. The only reason we could only talk to them was by giving them instruction as to where they could go, where they couldn't go. But when we moved into the town, our mortar platoon, we was in a big house, and that was opposite a German hospital, a German military hospital. And they was all, those men, the Germans, they were all amputees, either arms or legs. And, you know, there must have been about, 150 of them in there. But they never, you know, I mean, we never bothered them as such. I mean, they was in the care of their own German nurses, but as regards fraternisation, we weren't allowed to talk to anybody, whether it was man, woman or child. And we certainly wasn't allowed to get off the payment. We was the victors. They had to get off the payment and walk in the gutter, if you know what I mean. But things eased off a lot in 1945, because our duties were often involved in controlling displaced persons. We had a very big camp what are known as a DP camp, and we had to do guard duties on there at night time. You know, because they weren't, I mean, when I talk about DPs, they could have been Russian, they could have been Czechs, they could have been French, Greek, or anybody, you know, anyone that had been displaced by the German authorities for whatever reason. And of course, once the war ended and the gates of these camps, they all sort of flowed out. But, you know, things eased off, and the first major thing we had was when they had in Germany, very much like our harvest festival, but they really went to town, you know, party-wise. Not they had a lot to have for a party, but surprisingly what they could rustle up. And that was the first time we had any social fraternisation with them. You know, we had they had organised a 5 or 6 piece band, you know, within the battalion, not regimental band, all, you know, dance bands, and they had a bit of a dance and all that sort of thing. But we had our own canteen facilities, which in the town, and that was known as the Tiger Inn. Now, hence the tiger on the regimental badge. But the Germans weren't allowed in there. But the Tiger Inn didn't do a lot of business really, because we found it was more sociable to use the German equivalent of our pubs. And you know, we got on all right with them. you know, there was no real animosity. Mind you, one or two of the Germans, though, might have got a bit drunk at night and mouthed it off, but there was nothing untoward. I mean, there was no violence. And then, of course, we had an area for recreation where we took it in turns, where you could go to this area and you stayed a week there and you could learn how to ride a motorcycle or do rowing on the river, or even got as far as rowing in these skiffs, so eights. But it was all, you know, all very relaxed, and guard duties were gradually eased off. I only ever done one guard duty in that town, and that was on a factory that was producing aspirins. Yeah. But no, we gradually got to know the German men and women, and you know everything. And then that was in the mid May. That's it. And we was there till about October, and we was transferred down to the town of Salto. I don't know exactly. It was a fair distance away.
Still in Germany.
Oh, in Germany. Oh, yeah. But we was in the barracks in Salto. But it was decided that to ease the problem of the men of the battalion going back to Winston Lure on a Saturday to meet their lady friends or whatever, it was decided that the incoming unit, which was a Royal Artillery unit, they would have a football match. And after the football match, Winston was put out of bounds to us. And we had this football match. And then none of us were allowed back into that area, you know, for fraternising or anything else. That was just to stop. That was just to stop the what's the word? The possibility of a rivalry between the two units, the outgoing one and the incoming one. Anyway, when we was at Salto, we was given the opportunity of doing garrison duties in Berlin. And but that was in 1946, February 1946, and that was good. That was we was there for what, 3 or 4 months. There wasn't a lot of garrison duties to do, really.
Why did you like it so much?
Well, we had the use of German civilian transport, meaning buses, underground, U-Bahn, you know, the above ground. We could go into any cinema or theatre free. We could take advantage of, if you wanted to go to the opera, go to the German opera house, orchestral concert, anywhere in Berlin, whether it was in the American or the French or the British zone or even the Russian zone within a very selected area. We weren't allowed to go too deep into the Russian zone, but we never had any problems with the Russian soldiers. The most we saw of them was when done their guard changing duties at the Russian War Memorial, which was in the British sector of Berlin. And that was a fantastic memorial. Have you ever been to Berlin?
I've seen it, yeah.
Oh, you see it. And there's the old Russians pointing towards France. But anyway, but to see those on that journey from Helmstedt, where we came through from the British area in West Germany, and we came down that autobahn and into Berlin, and those Russian women, they're equivalent to our military police. They was red hot, red hot on traffic. You know, smart, you know, the way they'd done it all. But one good experience, we had Russian soldiers used to come into the German, into the British sector, and they would have their flipping, what you call it, vodka. And you'd be sitting down in a German little bar, and they'd come in and they'd slap you on the shoulder, "Drink, Tommy, drink." But we got on, we never had any problems though. But the social life, we could go, we had the, on the Kurfürsten Damm, we had a place called the Churchill Club, where you could go in there, be waited on, and have a three-course meal. You know, all English food, not naturally all provided by the British Army, for about 3 and 6 months in those days. And while we was having our, all, the tables all beautifully laid out, white tablecloths and all our, you know, nice cutlery. But while we was having the having our meal, they had a sort of a small orchestra up on the stage, and they used to play all this classical music. And one of the favourites the British soldiers used to have was the Poet and Peasant, you know, the overture. And a bit that used to, I think we were taking the mickey out of them, where the old violins were sawing away like a very fast bit of a Poet and Peasant. Anyway, you'd know if you played it at home. Anyway, I mean, used to throw, you know, Phoenix for him. Danke, danke. But the black market in Berlin was atrocious. They would sell their souls for cigarettes, and they would have their briefcases, and they'd stand along the street, and they was a dubious lot, some of them, I should think.
What do you mean?
Black market.
What do you mean dubious?
Well, they didn't look very fitting, honest. They didn't look very honest. Because I mean, I suppose that you know, some of them could pick up quite a lot of valuable stuff. Because I mean, the place was in 75% ruins even then.
What would they be trading for cigarettes?
Oh, cameras, watches, you name it. Silk stockings. Where they got the silk stockings from? I mean. Who knows? I mean, typewriters, you know, small stuff. Yeah. But beautiful wine glasses, and they was, you know, some of them really, you know, really nice stuff. But you know, I mean, to get it home to Great Britain, well, you either had to carry it when you came home on leave. Or you had to take chance and send it on what they used to call a duty free label, and that duty free label covered anything and everything. And you was allowed sort of two or three a year at the most. And some of the squaddies used to sell a duty-free label to you for, you know, for, you know, I mean, 100 marks then was about £2 10 shillings. A mark in those days was sixpence in Germany. But they soon changed that idea, though, when they had their revaluation of the marks. But I was home in England then. But the... you know, we was able to go into the Olympic Stadium swimming pool totally free, and yet in Norway we haven't even got a swimming pool. They built one in the 60s and the concrete failed. That one in Berlin was built in 1936 for the Olympics, still in use today. Yeah. Anyway, then we got sent back after about 3 months in Berlin, and that's where the battalion disbanded, and I was sent back to the another battalion in the Middlesex. I wasn't there long enough, and that was sort of late August, I suppose. Yeah, February, March, April, May. Anyway, I mean, time has gone by out of memory. And then that battalion broke up, and I was sent back to a transit camp down in Bielefeld, and there was all the flotsam and jetsam of the British Army there, because, you know, units were breaking up, you know, with the demobilisation. And I got posted back to Berlin in the October 1946, I came under what they call British Troops Berlin, and talk about putting a square peg in a round hole, they put me in an office, and run by the Royal Army Service Corps, which dealt from supplying 3-ton trucks, tipper trucks, you know, for shifting rubble, to supplying furniture for married quarters. And I was with them until I was demobbed in June 1947. And the one job that the clerk sergeant gave me there was I had to, what do they call it, what's the word?
Well, describe it.
Cutting out stupid little slips of paper and stick them in the King's Rules and Regulations.
Editing.
Yeah, editing. Putting new pieces over. Whoa, what's that blooming word?
Never mind.
And I've done that for about 3 months. I got bored with that.
Could I just ask you about those DPs? Mm-hmm. Was there any trouble from the displaced persons?
No. They was gradually shipped back to, you know, to where, yeah, from whence they came from. But of course, you see, at the same time in 1945, the German army was being demobilised and denazified, and Montgomery wanted as many tradesmen and skilled workers to get back into useful work. I mean, there was so much. I mean, the winter of 1945-46 out there was very cold, and they needed all the coal they could get. And they even, at one point, not that I ever went down there, they employed soldiers to go into the Harz Mountains and the Black Forest, I should say, and do tree felling, because they were that short of fuel.